Random thoughts. In this video, I'm going to talk about John Boyes. This is a guy who came to be known as the king of the Agikuyu people. And apparently his reign went on for about 2 years, from 1898 to maybe early 1900s. And he's a very interesting, this guy is a very interesting character, actually. And the first time I heard about him is when I was reading Richard Maynard Sagan's diary, where he describes him as a rogue kind of British guy. And Richard Maynard Sagan does mention that this guy was arrested and prosecuted for impersonating government officials. Richard Maynard Sagan does also say that he sold him a gun and this guy did not pay, and he describes him as a slippery customer. Now, this guy managed to pass himself off as also I should mention that he does talk about him conning Chief Karuri Wagakure of his ivory. He ran away with the ivory, sold it, and then he went to the UK. He was living very extravagantly and telling people he was the king of the Agikuyu people. Now, John Boyes was born around 1874 in Hull, East Riding, that's in Yorkshire in the UK, that is. And he was sent by his parents to Germany to study. And it seems like he had relatives there. That's why he was sent there. So he goes to Germany and he stays there for maybe 6 years. And that's what he says in his book. And I've read his book, John Boyes, the King of the Agikuyu people, or the King of the Wakikuyu, as the title reads. Now, he stays in Germany for about 6 years, and then he comes back to England, and his parents want him to continue with education, but he wasn't interested in studying more than what he had gotten in Germany. And he started hanging out in the docks, seeing ships coming and going. And apparently he got stories about, you know, these people traveling all over, and he would hear stories from them about these places they went to. And he was so intrigued, and he wanted to do that. He wanted to get a job in a ship and then travel the world. He was very young. He was like 12 or 13 years old. He was very young. And he got a job with one ship, and he moved around, I think, just around the UK, not outside initially. But then he got a job and he went to South America, and he describes that experience as not so good experience. He became very sick, but then he came back to England, and then he got another job, and this time round he went to South Africa. Now, this is around maybe 1890s, and he goes to South Africa, and while there, he hears of the stories of the Matabele Wars. Now, the Matabele Wars happened between 1893 to 1894, and he travels from South Africa, coming, of course, northwards to come and join the British Army in the Matabele Wars, and he is recruited as a police officer. Now, we need to take a lot of what John Boyes says in his book with a lot of, or a big pinch of salt, because this guy seems like he was to a large extent a con. So we shouldn't take everything he says to be factual. There is likelihood that some of the things he describes in the book are made up. So he goes, according to his book, he goes to the Matabele land, and he's recruited as a police officer, and he serves there, sort of a police officer, sort of a soldier, because he talks of them fighting the Matabele people. But that was very short-lived, and then in between there, he did do a lot of, you can say, menial jobs, working in a train as the guy who, of course, feeds the engine fuel. During those times, they were steam engines, of course. And then he is in Matabele land, and he likes the land, but then he's told that this land used to be so beautiful before there were so many Europeans here. And one guy tells him that you can get the same land, or look at the same land, the way this land was up north, where there has not been a lot of course, penetration by the British or the Europeans in general. And he decides he goes to the coast, and he takes a ship, and he arrives at Zanzibar. It's a long story. I'm trying to summarize it. He arrives at Zanzibar. He takes a boat from Zanzibar. He is in Mombasa. He meets some Europeans there. And initially, he talks to a European or a British government official who tells him it's not a good idea to go interland. But then he meets this other guy who went by the name Gibbons, I think, and they decide to do business. During this time, travel or transporting government goods from the coast to the hinterland was a huge business. Of course, transportation is still a huge business, but you can imagine at the time when there was no road, no vehicles, this is the time that the railway is being constructed. So much of the transportation was done by humans carrying loads on their head. Porters, as they were called. So most of the people who were in that business used to use people to carry the stuff. So the government, the British government, will hire people, will give contracts to people to do that work. And he and Boyes go and start that business, and they approach the government, the government officials, the British at the coast, to do that work. Now they think they are smarter than the people who have been doing it. They decide that we are not going to use humans to carry this luggage. We are going to buy donkeys and then carts and then put the stuff on the carts and then just, move through the land. They try that. They find out that it's very hard. It's a long story. It talks about going up to Naivasha, going all the way to Eldama Ravine and then doing some businesses around there. Now, while he's at Naivasha, he's been abandoned by most of his, as he calls them, boys, the Swahilis and the Arabs he had hired. They abandoned him for some reason. Looks like he was not a very good employer. He meets some Europeans at Naivasha who tell him that, or he finds out that these people don't have food. They are struggling to access food. And he asks around and he's told that in the land of the Wakikuyu, there's a lot of food. But there was a problem. The problem was that the Kikuyus were so intolerant. They were so aggressive. They were so unfriendly to people outside that if you just cross their land, you'd so easily be killed. And in fact, so many Arabs, Swahilis and Europeans were killed during that time by just crossing the land of the Wakikuyu. But he decides, I'm going, and he's told, don't go that place, you will not survive. But he goes and he crosses the Abadeas, and he goes and he meets the first person, he meets the first chief, as he describes him, is Karuri Wagakure. Now, they become friends. He's able to con him, we can say, and they become friendly, they become friends. Now, to cut the story short, because it's a very long book, it's a long story. Through Gakure or Karuri, he's able to befriend the people around there. But then he's able to build networks with other, we can call them chiefs, even though I don't think they were chiefs actually, the likes of Wangombe, the likes of different other people who had a lot of influence among the Kikuyu people. And over time, he travels to these different groups, and during this time, there's also a lot of fighting between the different groups of Wakikuyu, and he aligns himself with Karuri, and then he's able to bring the others together. And at some point, the height of it, I can say, is when he's able to bring all the major Kikuyu chiefs, and they go, they perform a blood brotherhood ritual. Now, and again, this is a story that he tells. We don't know whether it's actually true or it actually happened. It seems like he's exaggerating a lot of things. When you read the book, there are places where you think like, this I think is exaggeration. So he apparently brings all the Kikuyu chiefs, as he calls them, and they do a blood brotherhood ritual, including some Wandorobos, and they recognize him as their leader. And he started being the person they looked up to for advice, for if there were conflict. But all this time, he's still doing the business of getting food from the Wakikuyu and transporting it to Naivasha, where he sells it, and then he gets some things from Naivasha, he brings them to Kikuyu land, like clothes and things like that. And at some point, he went to Mombasa, he brings stuff. He also started trading in ivory. He will collect ivory from the land and then he transports it and he sells it. Now, in his book, he doesn't mention conning Karuri. Of course, he wouldn't say that. He doesn't say that he conned Karuri. He just talks about him going everywhere and getting ivory by exchanging it with cattle. And then he gets this ivory. Of course, he sells it. He never mentioned in the entirety of the book. He just portrays his relationship with Karuri as being friendly, and it ends in a very friendly note. That's what he writes. But of course, as I've said, Richard Maynard Sagan does mention that he conned Karuri and he took his ivory. And Karuri was so angry that he said that if he ever see him, he was going to do very bad things to him. Now, this guy continues. Now, here is another thing he does. He comes to Nairobi and he buys khaki uniform. And he goes, he gives it to his boys, the guys who worked for him, and they wear it, and now they look like police officers. And he also buys guns. He doesn't say where he got the guns from, because in some part of the book he does mention that he tried getting guns from the British government officials, and they told him, no, we can't give you guns. And he asked, why are the Arabs and the Indians having guns? And they tell him, we didn't sell them the guns. So he doesn't say where he got the guns from, but the way he seems like he went where the Arabs got their own guns from, and he got more guns from there. And he arms his boys, and he has a mini military actually, and he says he trains them, he basically makes them an army. And now he's moving around Mount Kenya, where he's now, in fact, he calls himself, he's the king. He says that all the chiefs recognized him as the king, and this comes from that ritual that I've mentioned that they performed with the likes of Wang'ombe and Karuri and others. Now, and of course, in that book, he does talk, he explains and describes a lot of violence that happens, of course. And now, we'll never know whether for sure the people accepted, but what is not in doubt is that he did manage to get some influence in that place, because he went on doing all this, and even had the Union Jack, which he would have carried in front of him. And at some point, the British heard about these stories, and this is where Richard Mainasagen comes in, talking about they heard of his the things he was doing. He even himself describes now the events that happen between him and the government, the British officials, government officials. They come and they tell him that they want to talk to him, and they arrest him. They take away the guns from his mini military, and they bring him to Nairobi, and then he's taken to the coast, because during that time Mombasa was like the capital, that's where the court was. And he is prosecuted for impersonating government officials or government official, but he is acquitted actually. He is acquitted, and this is something he himself says, and Richard Mainatsagen does actually say that this guy was acquitted. And he does go back to Kikuyu land, according to what he writes, and he says that he continues doing business with Karuri and others. Now, reading his book and reading Richard Mainatsagen's diary, it seems like his conning of Karuri happened after he had been acquitted. Seems that, because in the book he doesn't explain, or he doesn't say that he went to the UK, it must have happened after he had conned Karuri and took his ivory, and then he went to the UK and he was telling everyone who cared to hear that he was a king of the Agikuyu. And it seems like he felt so much wronged by the British government by taking away his influence, or by arresting him and prosecuting him and basically cutting his influence in central Kenya. Yeah, so that's a guy who came to central Kenya and claimed to be the first king of the Agikuyu. Those are my random thoughts.